Simply His Coffee Shop. Today we are going to be starting a four-week program special, and we will be talking to Donna Howell and Allie Anderson about their new book, The Mystery of Jesus, From Genesis to Revelation. Donna was gone most of the summer. If you have been following Simply His, you'll have noticed that she was gone for quite a while, and she was busy doing so much of the research that went into these books. And we have so much ground to cover. We want to dive right in and get on with this, because I don't even know if we'll be able to fit it into the four shows that we have planned for it. But Donna, mathematics actually goes in with the life of Jesus. Start explaining that, please.
Yeah, so we actually start with the question, first of all, is Jesus something that we can, you know, thoroughly put our faith and trust in?
Right.
And the reason we have to answer that is because the mystery of Jesus, from Genesis to Revelation, yesterday, today, and tomorrow, this series that we wrote is based on how Jesus appears in the 66 books of the Bible.
Okay.
If you're thinking at home, yeah, I've heard of this kind of an idea written before. You know, there are a couple of books, and they're pretty well known. They're this big, and they just go, blah, blah, blah. Here's how Jesus appears in all the 66 books. You're welcome. I'm not putting those things down. They're beautiful books.
Right.
But
right.
We dug so deep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we discovered things that these other people either didn't say at all, or they just skimmed right over, they just missed this giant revelation of importance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you have to start with the question, first of all, if they're still on the fence about Jesus,
right,
then how he appears in the 66 books of the Bible is largely irrelevant.
Right.
So we start with that. And one of the things I'd like to say is that first and foremost, Jesus can't be proven beyond the shadow of all doubt to a scientific brain. He's not supposed to be. Blessed are those who can believe without seeing.
Yes.
So God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, the whole Trinity, everything about God is a matter of faith. But there are things that God allowed to be worked into the human scientific system. And by the way, when I say human scientific system, I'm talking about those people who have that mindset. I'm not saying that God is not the God of science. Oh, my word, he absolutely is.
Yes.
But when you start with you know, approaching God and you do have that initial skepticism, he allows things to strengthen our faith.
Yes.
And one of the things that we actually looked into was the mathematical possibility that Jesus could have accidentally fulfilled some of these prophecies that were spoken of him. So you have the Old Testament and you have what these prophets said the Messiah would be.
Right.
How he would arrive, how he would die. How in the world do you have a king of the Jews who is at the same time a suffering servant to the people? This was a weird amalgamation of just a bunch of strange things that the people said in the past until it was fulfilled. And you're like, oh, that's what God was talking about through his prophets. There are scholars out there that say that Jesus fulfilled upwards or above 2,000 different prophecies or verses that looked forward to him. There are also a lot of scholars that say, let's take the number down and start with what is absolutely irrefutably something that Jesus fulfilled. Now, I want to take the number down even further than that. For a moment, set aside the supernatural activity, because it takes faith to believe that those things truly happened.
Absolutely.
Let's take only what we know to be true of the historical Jesus.
Okay.
All right? The one spoken of through Josephus and all the history books.
Okay.
We'll talk about his divinity in a minute. He has fulfilled conservatively somewhere in the ballpark of 300 statements about him from the Old Testament.
Yeah.
So the mathematical equation starts with something called basic calculable axioms.
Okay.
It's a very fancy pants way of saying things we know to be true.
Okay.
Now, what we know of history at that time, there was approximately 400,000 Jews in the Palestine area at the time.
Okay.
The Messiah would have had to have been a Jew.
Right.
Now, over half of these Jews were owned slaves, and we know that Jesus was never prophesied to be a slave.
Right.
He was a servant. That's a different thing.
Yes.
But he was not an owned slave.
Right.
That takes that number, squashes it down even further to approximately 150,000 people alive at that time that Jesus came into the earth. So you also have to remember that a lot of the Jews alive in Jesus's day did not really care a whole lot about Bethlehem. Now, they did believe that it was a sacred site because it was the city of David.
Yeah.
But if you were to go to a Jew alive in Jesus's day and say, hey, man, where's the holy city? Jerusalem. Yeah. They're going to point to Jerusalem. So where would the Messiah be born? Jerusalem. That's what they were thinking. That's exactly what they were expecting.
Because that's where the temple was.
And remember that not so much the Pharisees, but a lot of the religious leaders of Jesus's day did not necessarily believe or even pay any attention to the majority of the prophets because they followed the Torah and that was about it. So they didn't really pay much attention to what Micah would have said. But in Micah 5:2, he stated that the Messiah would be born in this little town called Bethlehem that nobody really thought much about anymore. Sacred site, yes, because it was the city of David. But a pregnant Jew in that age wouldn't have thought, I'm going to make a pilgrimage to Bethlehem. It was like nowheresville.com in those days. So the idea that he was born there is this bizarre little what? Why would the Messiah be born there? But it was the city of David, and that was why it was key. So you got to take the number of Jews that would have been born in that day in Bethlehem. That crunches it down to absolutely the merely hundreds range. And then we have the lineage. He was of the line of David.
Yes.
So how many of the 150,000 Jews were born in Bethlehem? That squashes it down to hundreds. How many of those people were of the line of David? Well, that squashes it down to possibly tens.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just talking about possibility of his birth. We add further details that comes from Psalm 34:20, Exodus 12:46, and Numbers 9:12, the fact that he would not experience any broken bones. Let me tell you something about that really quickly. The broken bone things, it was called crefragrum. In that particular time, Rome broke the bones of somebody on the cross because the bodies had to come down at a certain time. Mm-hmm. They had the Jews worried about bodies being down by Passover. The Romans had their own reasons why they had certain political things could only happen at certain times. And so they would accelerate the death of a cross victim by breaking the bones. The victim would die of asphyxiation if he was not capable to prop his body up.
Mm-hmm.
And so if his bones were broken, he could not do that. Not only is that the common practice when Jesus was dying on the cross, it was requested by the Jewish leaders, go in there and break his bones. We read about that in John 19:31. The Jewish leaders specifically asked that that happen for him. So now the mathematical possibility, it's already down to the impossible range.
Right.
The idea that this could have accidentally happened.
Yeah.
So to read a couple of excerpts from our book being quoted by mathematical experts in the field, here's one. A mathematician in this case would have to, one, narrow the number of possible candidates down from the basic calculable axioms we've just discussed. Two, calculate the probability statistics of a man who died in this exact manner when it was not the norm. Three, add the prophecy to the equation involving other potential prophetic fulfillments. And then I add such as his dying on the cursed pole. We read about that in Deuteronomy. His being pierced like his hands, feet were in his side. Plus other specific prophetic details from Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Zechariah, and all of the other prophets, right? Right. And then finally four, here's where we get to the bottom line. Four, we have to calculate the possibility that all of this accidentally occurred like this by some freak fluke accident to the individual who also just happened to claim to be the Messiah.
Exactly.
Wow.
Right? At this point, it takes more faith not to believe that Jesus was exactly who he said was. We haven't even talked about the supernatural stuff.
Right.
The other things that he fulfilled, this is why some of the scholars say it's up there in the thousands. Because you look at what the prophets said, and they only said so many things, but there's also what did Jesus fulfill that the Jews expected that was perhaps even extra biblical.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Things that aren't even necessarily, the Messiah will do this.
Right.
Like the broken bones. That was the Passover lamb.
Yes.
So when Jesus became the Passover lamb, he fulfilled that part of Passover. You're talking upwards of 2,000 things that Jesus could not have accidentally did.
Yes.
Not even to mention the way he died around the day of Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read some of the work that we've done, Allie and I have done in The Messenger, you discover that it really was Passover day. He died at the same time as the lambs.
Okay.
When Jesus was on the cross and his arms were outstretched and he said, it is finished, that was precisely at the exact same moment that over there in Jerusalem temple, the priest outstretched his hands and said, it is finished, because he just slaughtered the Passover lamb whose blood covers the altar, and bam, There's a transference that happens in that moment, a spiritual quickening, an awakening of something foretold.
Right.
From the beginning of time.
Yeah.
Whoops. Jesus accidentally.
Right, exactly.
These are things, listen, even if Jesus wanted to have, he did not have the political power to put himself on the cross that
right.
very day, in that very moment.
Right.
It takes more faith not to believe. I'll end really quickly with the mathematical equations with this. Peter Stoner, a renowned mathematician, he computed that the probability of fulfilling only 48 prophecies, only 48.
Only.
What?
Only.
Of the 48, the mathematical possibility that Jesus could have done that by accident is, listen to this number, one chance in a trillion, 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 trillion.
Good grief.
That's a lot of trillions.
That's a lot of trillions.
It's more faith not to believe.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
This is where this all goes. We don't have the hours it would take for me to completely expound what I have to say about this. If Jesus is who he claims to be, then he is the one who appears in 66 books of the Bible. And the rest of what we would have to say in the book is how.
Absolutely.
That's like your kids coming and telling you, Mom, I love you so, 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 so. You know, it's a kid thing. It's right, like right. The trillion, trillion, trillion. It's just incredible that he fulfilled all of that. And it's only, what was it, 48?
Yeah, 48 accidentally.
Accidentally. So there's your accident. So Allie, can you explain to us what a Christophany is and why it plays into Jesus in all 66 books?
Yeah. So there are things called theophanies and Christophanies.
Okay.
And basically what they are is if in the Old Testament you see an angel of the Lord appear and it's got a capital A,
right.
Or if an angel appears that allows something to occur that normally an angel wouldn't allow. Like, for example, in the book of Revelation, we see that when John bows down to worship an angel, the angel says, "See thou do it not, I am your fellow servant." What that means is don't worship me, I'm serving God just like you are,
right.
To put it in modern day language. Sometimes in the Old Testament, we see a capital A angel appear, and this angel will allow itself to be worshipped.
Okay.
So you're like, hold on, do we worship angels or not? I don't understand. Or like, for example, with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when they were thrown into the fiery furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, you know, the guy looks in and he sees that there's another person with them, and he's like as unto the Son of God. Well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
These are appearances of Jesus in the Old Testament.
Okay.
Right. So the difference between a theophany and a Christophany is a theophany is a corporeal appearance of God.
Okay.
And then Christophany being a corporeal appearance of Jesus. Now, somebody would question, well, how do we know which one's which?
Right.
Scholars have kind of looked at the Trinity and their functions.
Okay.
And we understand not only would an angel never accept worship, especially in the KJV translation, when you see capital A, angel of God, that's usually a Christophany that you're seeing. A lot of times that angel is specifically identified as God in the surrounding verses.
Okay.
And when it's not, there are those key figures. Well, first of all, when scholars look at the fact that God the Father, you can't see his face, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got verses like John 1:18, Exodus 33:20, and so on, that specifically say you can't see God. You cannot see him face to face. You'll die. There's all these things.
Right.
But then we also have other verses, Genesis 32:24-30, Judges 13:22, and there's several others that specifically say, I have seen God, or I've wrestled with God, or
yeah.
You
right.
know what I'm saying? This is what scholars say. This is not Donna Howell theology. This is what the scholars have said. This is how
right.
you break down the difference between a Christophany and a theophany.
Okay.
Is that the God the Father is one that you cannot see.
Okay.
And that Jesus, you can't say you can't see Jesus. All everybody saw Jesus who was walking
right,
around.
Right.
So that's the member of the Trinity that appears as a corporeal Old Testament figure when it's something that appears to be more human in its appearance. So whereas okay. we might say the burning bush was obviously God the Father, or that's what scholars say, then we have over here Christophany when the man appeared unto Joshua and said, I'm not for you or for your adversaries. I am here as the captain of the host of the Lord. So if that's an angel and Joshua just got done worshiping this angel and he didn't deny the worship, we know we're looking at a God figure, which one of the God figures he's appearing in person and so
right.
on. So that's a
okay.
Christophany. Now, with as much time as I want to spend on Christophanies, we would be here for a 6-episode arc. But let me truncate this down a little bit. Allie mentioned the one with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where King Nebuchadnezzar himself said that fourth figure looks like the Son of God. We have other possible Christophanies. theophany is appearing all throughout. We have appearances to Abraham in Genesis 18, Abraham and Isaac in Genesis 22, Solomon in 1 Kings 9 and 19, David in 2 Samuel 24, Elijah in 1 Kings 1 and 19, Isaiah in Isaiah 6. And listen, let me just squash this down really quickly. We have him as possibly the angel of the Lord who took down the entire army of the Assyrians in 2 Kings 19 and Isaiah 37, amidst an entire list that we don't even have to cover. Here's the idea. Jesus was not only foreshadowed in the Old Testament, he was there physically, corporeally, constantly throughout the Old Testament, appearing before he was ever even born. Yeah. So Jesus is in the 66 books of the Bible. He's everywhere. Yeah. It's beautiful when you see it.
It is. I love that, because when you don't know this kind of thing, you know, it's so easy in church to think that God the Father acted alone through the Old Testament.
Right.
And then in the New Testament, Jesus came into the picture. Mm-hmm. And then when Jesus left, then the Holy Spirit came into the picture. So it was like this slow growing of one and then two. But the truth is, they've been acting together all along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus was there in the beginning. Absolutely. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. That's him right there. You know, the first appearance that we know of.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because in the beginning was the Word. The word Word in Greek, logos, to the Greeks, it had a creative power to it.
Okay.
It didn't just mean to speak. It meant that too. But there was this element of creative power. So in our book series, we actually took a minute to break down what was, first of all, this idea of challenge and riposte. Greeks and the Romans had this get together in public and kind of put each other down a little bit. And I'm going to say something fancy and you're going to respond and let's going to see who wins. It was called challenge and riposte. Wow. It was a real thing. It was like a sport.
Okay.
Wow. All right.
Debate team.
Yeah.
Back
then.
Yeah.
Debate team. Perfect. Okay. They had around the word being spoken out of the mouth what was not just a sound. It was an element of control, power.
Okay.
That was how they expressed and understood and believed in the power of the spoken word. So it's interesting when you go back to the word, it was there in the beginning, and then you go back even further to what Genesis has to say. They're talking about the same time, John 1 and Genesis 1. But you have the Old and the New Testament looking at this moment when God spoke and it was created. And then you find out that Jesus was the one who created this. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, the Father's the creator. Jesus is the nice guy who comes in and kind of makes it happen. No, the Word was the creator. It was made through him and for him. Whoa.
Right.
Jesus is so much bigger and so much grander and so much there from the beginning.
Yeah.
And by the way, so was the Holy Spirit, because he hovered over the waters of the deep. They were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were working together, right?
On that note, we do need to take a really quick break to show you how you can get your copies of these amazing books. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, Donna Howell, Dr. Thomas Horn, and Allie Anderson team up to bring you their magnum opus. Introducing the brand new 3-volume anthology from Defender Publishing, The Mystery of Jesus from Genesis to Revelation. This new collection is being described by those closest to Dr. Thomas Horn as the most important body of legacy work he's ever written. And it's being offered right now in Skywatch TV's largest giveaway of the year. Skywatch TV is proud to announce The Mystery of Jesus Grand Giveaway. Volume 1 of The Mystery of Jesus from Genesis to Revelation begins in the Old Testament and reveals multiple ways that Jesus made personal appearances on earth called Christophanies prior to his birth through the Virgin Mary, the many links between Mount Sinai, the Day of Pentecost, and the Ascension from astounding but largely hidden revelations in the original Hebrew and Greek, how the words of the prophets regarding the someday Messiah preceded a 400-year season of silence and anticipation that led to disastrously incorrect interpretations of who he would be when he arrived, and so much more. Volume 2 begins in the New Testament and demonstrates what social and political events transpired during the intertestamental period that led to a movement of numerous false messiahs whose military pursuits splintered the Jews into various disjointed sects, each with their own misguided, documented messianic expectations. How extra-biblical and apocryphal books written around the time of Jesus give fresh insight on New Testament characters, their true identity and reputation, and how that affects proper biblical interpretation, the real and largely misunderstood purpose of Christ's ministry years on earth, and why there is an apparent deficit of miraculous miraculous manifestations in our day, and we're barely scratching the surface. Then Volume 3 moves directly to the apocalypse, where you'll learn clear-cut, comprehensible explanations behind even the most enigmatic and hard-to-understand symbols in Revelation that anyone can read and understand. How Jesus, present and active in all 66 books of the Bible, makes his grand and final entrance in shining glory to welcome into the New Jerusalem all who receive the free gift of salvation. And we're just getting started. Presented in three brand new volumes, The Mystery of Jesus from Genesis to Revelation is organized in a way that is guaranteed to fascinate and boggle the minds of everyone, from seasoned scholars to new believers. This is the life of Christ illuminated like you've never experienced before. When you order this incredible collection, you'll also receive the new Best of Defender Publishing ebook collection on data disc. Now, for the first time, this must-have assortment features 120 of the most information-packed best-selling books in Defender history, including the never-before-digitally released version of the Defender Family Bible, featuring Old and New Testament with expanded Apocrypha. These full-length works are in popular ebook formats, so you can read them on Kindle, EPUB, PDF, and other handheld electronic devices. Give this collection as the ultimate gift to somebody you know this holiday season, or take them with you wherever you go. Valued at over $2,000 all by itself. But that's not all. With the holidays just around the corner, now's your chance to save big and receive bonus merchandise. As included in the Mystery of Jesus grand giveaway are any number of brand new super quality overstock gift books, DVDs, or audio sets to add to your library or give away as gifts this coming holiday season. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of over $2,000. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. This is the largest giveaway of the year, just in time for the holiday gift-giving season, and is available only while supplies last. So don't delay. The Mystery of Jesus Grand Giveaway. Available now at SkyWatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
Welcome back. We are continuing our discussion today on the three-volume set, The Mystery of Jesus from Genesis to Revelation. And it's been a fascinating conversation already.
Yeah, it has.
And we're going to continue to dive right in. We had just talked about Genesis and how Jesus was actually in Genesis, yeah, even at the very first word. The Word was God. And Donna was explaining how that refers back to Jesus.
Yeah.
So, Allie, going back to Genesis, though, Eve, she's one of the main characters for mm-hmm. the first part of Genesis, and she always gets a bad rap.
She does.
Explain that a little to us.
She does. Well, I mean, she's one of the main characters for all of humanity, right? It's the whole reason we have all these girl problems we have, right? We always blame Eve. But one thing to think about with Eve, first of all, is think about human psychology and the fact that the formative years occur between 0 and 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're talking about a person who was created already with cognitive abilities in place. There are no enculturation years. And this is a person who's never seen consequences play out. As human beings, how do we learn?
Yeah.
We learn by seeing. We learn the hard way. Sometimes we're smart and we learn by other people's mistakes. But it's always through watching consequences play out. And I'm not making excuses for her like, oh, she didn't actually disobey God. She did.
Right.
But
right.
if you think about a little kid, you know, and you say, don't touch that, it's hot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If they have never seen hot play out.
Right.
How hot is it? What even is hot? Let me touch it to find out what hot even is. You know, there's this curiosity that's innate to human beings to try things and push boundaries and watch consequences play out, for as self-punishing as that is, that we put ourselves in these situations. If she hadn't have done it, it would have been Adam, who was, by the way, right there next to her when she did it. He could have stopped it. He didn't. You know, the bottom line is that at some point in time, that curiosity that's a part of human nature was going to take over. Eve's just getting the blame for all of it, but every last one of us would have done it.
It's, what's funny is that Barnes Notes actually refers to this psychological infancy that you're referring to. And he has this to say: let us remember that this was the first falsehood the woman had ever heard. Her mind was infantile as yet, so as far as experience was concerned. The opening mind is naturally inclined to believe the truth of every assertion until it has learned by experience the falsehood of some. In this falsehood was the element of truth as well. The serpent told her, you're not going to die. Well,
immediately.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, this idea that the tree really did issue in a knowledge of good and evil, mm-hmm. making her not like God, like the serpent said, yeah. but making her understand something that only God in that moment had. Mm, so right, there was right. element of truth mixed with deception. So what occurred when man being men and women, mm-hmm. let me just men and women here, when man lost his supremacy of innocence in that moment?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What God could have chosen to do is punt kick earth
right.
and let it ping pong around the universe mm-hmm. and say, hang it with all of you, I'm done.
Yeah.
God mm-hmm. had every right to have seen humanity in that moment and said, I told you not to, yet, but you did, you touched the thing.
You had one job.
Exactly. I love that. In the beginning, we had one job. but instead, what does God do? This is called proto-evangelion. If you've heard that word, it means the first glimmer of the gospel. It means the very first prophetic messianic notation in the word.
Okay.
And it's this moment where God says, okay, I see what you did. See what you did there. I'm going to fix it.
Mm.
You were told not to touch the thing. You touched the thing. You had to touch the thing. I'm going to fix it. Although our book very much does break that down, it is exactly what you've been taught, if you've been taught, that it's this idea that good and evil will war. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the serpent, this is the enemy of all time, will be crushed by something. This was the moment that Jesus died on the cross. He was the Savior that was promised as early as Genesis 3:15.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's what scholars call the proto-evangelion. It's the moment where God intervenes with his own power from his own Trinity membership with absolutely zero obligation to save anybody or do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
What we also discover in this exact same area of scripture is you stumble across these Greek and Hebrew words or whatever. Ultimately, it's the imagio Dei. And what that means is image of God. Yeah. We are all equal inheritors of the image of God, right? We have his image. That doesn't mean we look like him physically. Read the book. What it means is that where witnessing counts, you have everything in common with every single person. Because the person that you're looking at right now and you're thinking, God, that's not my ministry. You didn't call me to talk to those kinds of people. Yeah, he did. Read about the Great Commission in the New Testament. How do I know that you can connect with that person, that you can draw them in and speak God to that person and witness to them in their hurt? Mm-hmm. How do I know that? Because whether they're saved or not, they're human. Human means equal inheritor of imago Dei. What does that mean? You have the image of God. They have the image of God. And that image of God is so sacred that you can connect. You are called. You do have a responsibility to love the lost, no matter how they offend you.
That's right. That's good.
That is so true. And that goes back to grace.
Yeah.
God gave us grace in that Genesis 3:15. That's when grace started. We are completely out of time. I hope you enjoyed this. Did you guys enjoy this?
Yeah.
This has been an incredible discussion, and we will be back next week. You will not want to miss it. We'll see you next time in the Simply His Coffee Shop.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.